Proverbs 31, verse 27 and 28. She watches the conduct of her household, and eats not her food in idleness. Her children rise up and praise her. Her husband, too, extols her. Women influencing the nation? Stick around. Let's talk about it.
Houston, we have a problem.
Habemos papam.
Podcasting from a parking lot in The Woodlands, Texas, it's The Catholic Hack with Joe McLean.
Take this, all of you, and eat it. This is my body, which will be given up for you.
1 Peter 3:15. Always be ready to give an explanation to anyone who asks you for a reason for your hope.
Take this, all of you, and drink from it. This is the cup of my blood, the blood of the new and everlasting covenant. It will be shed for you and for all, so that sins may be forgiven.
The Church of the Living God, the pillar and foundation of truth. 1 Timothy 3:15.
Do this in memory of me.
Welcome back to The Catholic Hack. I'm Joe McLean, and this is episode number 23. Today, I get to share with you an interview that I had just the other night with Jen Giroux of Women Influencing the Nation. This was a fantastic interview, and I think you're going to enjoy that. I also want to thank everybody who downloaded the Victor Claveau interview. Victor is the CEO of the John Paul II Society of Evangelists and School of Evangelization. That was a great interview, and I had a tremendous amount of response to that interview. On the day that I posted that, I had over 10,000 hits to the site. And on that day, I had over 500 downloads. So that was a very, very good response. Thank you. Very, very much. To all you new listeners, welcome aboard. Thank you for taking the time to check out this podcast. I want to encourage you to stop by the blog, www.catholichack.com. And there you can check out all the other podcasts that I've posted. You can also go to my main website, joemclean.com, go to the Catholic Hack podcast link, and then go to archives, and you can listen to all the past episodes. I am working on a way to provide an easier method of downloading those podcasts in straight MP3 form, but you can, as always, get a hold of me on iTunes. Just go to iTunes, search the store for podcasts, type in Catholic Hack in the description, and I should come up. And while you're there, not only subscribe to the podcast, but leave me a review. I've gotten a tremendous amount of graces coming my way because of good people leaving reviews on that iTunes store for this podcast. That has really helped the podcast to get a greater visibility. We have been featured in the Christian podcast section, and that will absolutely open up more doors, more opportunities to share the beautiful truth of our Catholic faith with other listeners. So thank you all very, very much for your support. I also have some good news. We have finalized the dates for John Martinoni. I'll be interviewing John in November. And John, as most of you, I'm sure, are well aware, is of EWTN's Open Mind Monday fame. He's also the president and CEO and chief apologist at the Bible Christian Society. You can check out his website at www.biblechristiansociety.com. And I've also finalized the date with Tariq Saab. Tariq was on season 5 of The Apprentice, and he is a devout Maronite Catholic, and he is doing some great work speaking to the Catholic youth in our country, encouraging them to remain pure and chaste, and he has got a great message. So I'm excited to share him with you. So please, I'll be interviewing him in November, and so check out this podcast in the month of November, because we have a lot of exciting things coming your way. I want to say some quick hellos to some people who sent in some emails this week. Joe Healy of defendlife.blogspot.com sent me an email. Apparently we have a great thing in common. His son's name is Joseph John Paul, and my son's name was John Paul Joseph, both born this year. So that is fantastic. Go by his website, defendlife.blogspot.com, and check that out. Tom Hall, the founder of LoveToBeCatholic.com, also sent me an email saying he's checked out the podcast. Thank you very much, Tom. I'd like to ask you to check out LoveToBeCatholic.com. It's an alternative to Google Video or to YouTube. So that's a great opportunity for Catholics to plug into great Catholic video content without all the worry of risque advertising. So thank you very much, Tom, for sending in your feedback. Brian Michael Page of Christus Vincent Anywhere podcast sent in an email this week saying that he was going to help support pushing out the Catholic Hack t-shirts. Thank you very much, Brian. I want to encourage everybody to stop by Christus Vincent podcast by a link on the blog at CatholicHack.com and check out what Brian is doing. It's a great Catholic podcast that deals with the liturgy. If you ever wondered how the liturgy is made up, well, Brian's website is the place to go for that. So check out the link. Also, Brian and Mary Jo, I want to say buddy, but I'm not 100% sure if I've got that right. But Brian found us off of the Tupelo Catholic Show, where Rob Williams from Tupelo Catholic Podcast had interviewed me a couple of weeks back. And he heard that and wanted to check out the Catholic Hack. So thank you very much, Brian, for taking the time to listen to this podcast. And I am working on a way to improve on getting those older podcasts to you, but you can listen to them on the archive page. Also, Damian Wargo from the Kingsmen Apostolate sent me an email saying he was going to buy a Catholic Hack t-shirt, and I want you to buy a Catholic Hack t-shirt. So please stop by the blog, click on the link, and purchase your Catholic Hack t-shirt today. That will greatly help in supporting this podcast, supporting Catholic-owned businesses, and bringing a whole new set of listeners to this podcast. So thank you for your support. Okay, without further ado, we have a great interview to get into. We need to talk about the truth of the feminist movement, of the destruction of women's integrity, and how we can reverse the course and build women up in the truth. So let's roll up our sleeves, let's dive deep, and let's get into the truth.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This school, when I sit even just a little bit, I get hit with the power that made the veil in the temple split. When I submit, fall on the floor and the door. Can't get enough, got to come back for some more.
Hey, we've got a problem here.
Sinner, every woman, hypocrite can benefit in the school. Repent and commit.
Roger
that. As the incense rises up in adoration of the throne, something happens to my wounded heart from all the love revealed and shown. Bright light, Shekinah comes to my aid to persist. To change and sustain the way I think it exists. To feel the bliss because my name is in the book of life's list. That's what happens when you sit in the school of the Eucharist.
Mr. Emmett, take her down. Make your depth 150 feet, 10 degree down bubble.
150 feet, 10 degree down bubble. Aye, sir.
Dive.
Welcome back to the Catholic Hack. I'm Joe McLean. Today we have a great guest for you, Jen Giroux. Jen is the national founder and executive director of Women Influencing the Nation, an organization dedicated to reclaiming traditional morals in our society today, with special emphasis on regaining respect for women and instilling a love for and a desire to have more children once again in America. Jen has been a registered nurse for 24 years, where she has witnessed firsthand the devastating physical, mental, and spiritual fallout from the feminist movement, especially in areas of birth control and abortion. This has been the foundation of her inspiration to form the nationwide network called WIN to counteract the negative impact that the feminist influence has had over the past 35 years in destroying our families. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe. I'm happy to be here.
Well, Jen, I want you to start us off with giving us a background about how you got started in this activist movement of yours.
Well, it all started, I will tell you, I was raised as a cradle Catholic. I have 10 siblings myself, and my husband and I have 9 children, ages 6 to 23. And after the birth of my youngest child, I had a lot of difficulties in childbirth with him and ended up having a hysterectomy. And the reason I tell you that was really sad for us. And it was amazing how many people would say, well, I bet you're relieved that you can't have any more children, and how amazed we were at people's reaction at saying that to us, because we were very sad.
Right.
But I came to the reality at that point that I was in the position as he started to get to be 2 years old that I was in a position to start getting back into doing more activist things outside the home as he was starting to grow, because we had our children very close together. And I started to pray about that, and I had always kind of envisioned that there's a lot of women like myself that are very consumed with doing the most important thing in this country, raising the next generation and taking care of our families, but we're also very politically informed, and we feel like we have a role that we can play as well. So I always felt like that is a sleeping giant across this country, and that I wanted to form an organization that would counteract the negative and harmful effects of the National Organization of Women. And so I came up with Women Influencing the Nation, because I do feel like mothers have the greatest influence in this nation because of the morals that we can instill in our children to be the future leaders. And so as a result of just praying about that, the opportunity came along to form a website when the movie The Passion of the Christ was just in its beginning stages. And my parents, when I was growing up, just always taught me, you know, you want to stand up and defend your faith when the opportunity presents itself. And, of course, that's what we as Catholics learn when we're confirmed. And my dad always kids around about the fact that he thinks I got an extra hard slap during that confirmation from Bishop Elko, God rest his soul, because I just always have had that desire to defend the truth in our faith, and I can't explain it, but throughout grade school and high school and college, and after, when someone was blaspheming my faith, I just, even if it was in a crowd of 1,000 people or 100 people or 10 people, I just felt a need that was what we were called to do.
Wow.
So I was watching an interview with Mel Gibson, and I looked at my husband and I said, why are they attacking him for doing this? We have to do something about this. And my husband is just the most wonderful, supportive person in the world, very incredible, and everything he does for our family, just looked at me with that look. He knew it was coming. He's like, what on earth are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. And I let's pray about it, but we've got to do something, because look at how he's being attacked just for trying to find a movie true to the Gospels and true to our faith. And so within a couple of days, I said, let's start a website where people can come in and support. At that time, they were not even talking about the movie being allowed to be distributed in the country. It's real interesting to talk about this now, because it was such a blowout success.
Right.
But at the time, they were talking about not even having theaters carrying this movie because of the negative propaganda that was going on. So let me just fast forward, long story short, with a lot of prayer and just in taking that first step to start, we founded the website SeeThePassion.com. And within 10 months, we received 22 million hits on that site.
Wow.
You can still view over 25,000, I believe, online conversion stories that people put on there of how it changed their life. And the enormous amount of blessings that came through, that was the formation of Women Influencing the Nation. Unbeknownst to me, when I started that, I said, well, let's go ahead and make this the first project. We had over 200 women in their local communities sign up to a leadership page we set up that they wanted to promote the passion in their area. And we ran commercials asking people across the country to call their theaters and ask to carry the film. Women promoted it in their own area. And all of a sudden, I was connected to all these moms around the country, just like myself, very busy every day meeting the needs of our families, but really making a difference. And we had a lot of incredible things happen within no time, from just word of mouth and invoking the help of a few friends. I was getting calls from the national media to go and defend on national TV debate shows and national radio shows the merits of this movie, the truth of the movie, the fact that it was true to the Gospels. And it was a real gift and a privilege that I felt God truly humbled me to be in the position to be able to do this, and in connection with a lot of women that worked very hard across the country. And it was a very, very beautiful thing to be a part of. And I'll tell you what was something that was what I thought was a very grace-filled moment is on the day that it opened, which was February 25th, 2004, through our website, I got an email that there was a request from Sister Lucia's convent over in Fatima.
Oh, wow.
To see the movie. And at first I said, oh my gosh, could this possibly be true? And we investigated it, and it sure enough was a true request from that. And one of the women that helped me in Florida, Lourdes Gutierrez, with the blessing of Mel Gibson, took that movie over with his crew and showed it and watched the movie with Sister Lucia.
Wow.
And it was incredible. I would have loved to have gone. She took a picture of my little daughter over and asked Sister Lucia to play for her. I have a special needs daughter. And she got to converse with her because she spoke Spanish, which was close to Portuguese.
Mm.
And Sister Lucia afterwards said, it is the reality, which has never been printed anywhere. But she was amazed by the movie. The other thing that was just a tremendous gift is that this is a kind of a funny story. I was doing a lot of these evening talk shows on TV, and a lot of times I would come home. I worked 2 days a week as a registered nurse for the last 24 years. And my husband would be with the children when I'd do that, and I'd get these calls to go on these talk shows. So I'd come home, I'd be feeding the kids dinner and getting ready to go and doing my talking points and seeing who I was against to debate. Well, the one night I came home, and everybody was asleep because I got home after 11, and the phone rang, and lo and behold, it was a three-way call with somebody I knew that I had done a screening with for The Passion, but the third person on the call was Mel Gibson.
Oh, wow.
And the funny thing is, though, I did not have my cordless phone, and I was trying to reach across, from my side of the bed where I was standing where I got in to poke my husband to wake him up because I knew he truly would think I was an insane person and really too consumed with this movie if I told him in the morning Mel Gibson had called her out. So I never did get him awake that night to hear that I was talking to Mel Gibson on the phone. But he was truly just a normal, nice guy person that had seen me debate something on that show that evening. I believe that was the night I did get to pass on to him that Sister Lucia's comment had called about that.
Mm.
But the wonderful thing that night is I got to tell him how many requests came through that website from families of prisoners across the country that were just pleading and begging for that to go into the prisons. And I asked him if we could take it in the prisons, and he said, I already tried, and we can't get it in there in California. And I said, well, how about you give me permission to try and give me the name of somebody at your, at Icon, and let me give it a go. And he said, okay, go ahead, and gave me the information. And by the grace of God and through making a few phone calls through Chuck Colson's Prison Ministries, we and a wonderful woman named Marion Bell, we managed within a couple weeks by the day before Easter, and this was before it was ever released on DVD. It was still in the theaters. To take it down into Broward County Prison, 500 women, hardcore criminals. It's the most, hardcore criminal place in Florida. They all have to go through there, the ones that have committed murder and everything,
wow.
Gang murders. 500 women viewed this film, and it was the most amazing experience. They all stood up afterwards and talked about how they were going to change their life and how they were moved by the movie.
Mm.
It was unbelievable, and it certainly drove home to me how we need to pray for these women and men that are in prison, because they are just like everybody else that get in there and realize what they've done, and it's a horrible thing that we forget to pray for them. But as a result of that, Icon donated a DVD of The Passion to every prison in the country. So that was just one little way.
Praise
that
God.
By following an inclination to do something, sometimes if you take the first step, God will go ahead and open the doors for other people to jump in and help you to be a witness to your faith. And so I don't take credit for that one bit. I think I just followed an inclination,
mm-hmm.
and God used it as an avenue for a lot of people to jump in and expose the goodness of that movie, and that it was true to expose it for His honor and glory.
Yeah, you just described that, and I was thinking to myself, Mel Gibson could not get that done. But here it is, this Catholic mom with 9 children could get this movie done and change such lives. And tonight I was reading Proverbs 31 and just really reflecting on how much power, that the woman has God created this woman with such great power. And I look at all the work that my own wife does. We are a homeschooling family, and my wife works 24/7, and I wish I had the stamina and the energy that she has. And so getting things done is just phenomenal. So you were able to take this energy and now refocus it after The Passion into women influencing the nation, huh?
Well, as a result of that, we did have a lot of, we had an enormous email list that we were able to communicate with. And It wasn't the perfect scenario. Obviously, I did have 9 children, and we just did the best that we could do to try and stay in touch on whatever ways that we could. And as situations rose that seemed to need our attention, we would try to go to that project next. And basically, what we've tried to do, and it just is when we feel like God is calling us to take on another project, we try and garner up the energy to do it. It's not always at the perfect time in your life that God needs you to step up. We found that out many ways, and you could probably tell that by the big circles under my eyes. But we had a couple of other things that occurred that came up. We had a scenario actually with my husband was quite instrumental in. Just 2 Christmases ago, if you remember, across the country, there was a real big push for everybody to say Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas.
I remember.
It was really bad 2 years ago, to the point where it really felt like they were trying to secularize the entire country. And my husband really noticed significantly, we own a Catholic store, a Catholic shop, we call it. It's a bookstore and a gift shop. And that's our family business. And my husband really noticed that Christians were feeling too intimidated to even say Merry Christmas inside our Christian bookstore.
Wow.
And so he said, we really need to do something. And he and I talked. And we ended up doing these wristbands, just say Merry Christmas. And we did it just in our own little community and kind of spread the word. I spread the word among some of the women and women influence in the nation. And long story short with that, that was the last week of November. We decided to step up and do that. And it really caught on fire. And within 4 weeks, I think day and night, we shipped out about 100,000 of those across the country. And that was just one of those things where the stories and emails that came in from frustrated Americans that just really wanted to reclaim Christmas for the child Jesus again was so, some of the stories brought us to tears. And it was just like something that they could do. They could wear this. They could distribute them at school. Some of the emails were funny. They were from lawyers. I'm going to pass these out at my law firm Christmas party. The heck with them. Send me 20, you know. But it was really just, it was kind of the perfect storm that Christmas, where for some reason the social engineers in this country had convinced the big retailers not to say Merry Christmas.
I do remember
and
that.
And then... And it was just all happening at once. The separation of church and state, which is a complete judicial myth, that was being hoisted upon parents. And then parents, you know, their little kids in school are being told to sing religious music with secular words.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they push hard enough against parents to understand this is our country. This separation of church and state is a complete myth. They actually held religious ceremonies inside the Capitol, the first few presidents of the United States. So there is a liberal distortion going on before our very eyes as our children are being raised here. And so that was just another example of how, you know, we really tried to take something we thought needed somebody to stand up and do something. And we had absolutely no idea that it would take off as it did. It really got picked up across the country, and our phone was ringing 6 in the morning till 2 in the morning because of California hours.
Wow.
And so it was just God's way of using us as a small instrument to get the word out to folks. And that was just another way that sometimes God will just tell you to go with an inclination and do it, and then you have no idea what path he could lead you down with. Regarding women influence in the nation and the desire we have to try and encourage younger women again to embrace motherhood, you know, I've been a nurse for 24 years, and part of what I did in the last 12 years was in the pre-surgical services, same-day surgery area, and that entailed taking women's medical histories. And it was amazing what women would talk about and reveal with that. Well, of course, I wouldn't go into anything specific with anybody specific, but the overall theme was that the older women, and older saying women that are, you know, beyond 40 and 50, not just in the hospital, but constantly in my life, and I feel like God is really nudging me to continue to do something on this, constantly reveal to me their regret of not having more children. And if you look around and, you know, if you are among, we have a lot of friends that do have a lot of children, but But most people will react to large families like, oh my gosh, you have 9 children, and you kind of get all the same questions. How many bedrooms do you have? Is that from your uterus? I mean, you get like all the same questions, you know?
Right.
And gosh, you know what? You've heard them all probably.
Yeah,
I'm
do you know what causes that?
Yeah. And I love my Irish friend who, you know, you would never guess anything would come out of her mouth that isn't just as sweet as can be. She's expecting her 12th, and they're all redheads, adorable, and she's just, you know, the walking voice of charity, finally blurted out, yes, and we like it, and kept walking forward when they said, you know what causes that. So that was a good answer.
Yeah, that is a good one.
but anyway, the fact of the matter is, if you look around in the general secular public, the China mentality is already here.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have seen in the younger generation, I have, 49 nieces and nephews, and a number of them are already in high school and college. And I have 3 myself in college, and I'm always, you know, talking to them and picking their brain about what's going on with kids their age, and they're very open with me. I mean, they've seen me debate all these issues on TV, because once I did the passion debates on TV, they keep you in their file, and then they would call me back on women's issues, which is what I really wanted to get into to after that. And so they would talk to me about these things and really tell me what was going on. And it's so gut-wrenching when I now have faced the reality of the damage that Planned Parenthood and other organizations like them have done in perpetrating the lies that they have upon us in the last 30 years.
Yeah.
If you look at our website right now, which is womeninfluencingthenation.com, you'll see that we have heavily concentrated right now on the battle going on in Kansas. I did a complete overhaul of our website this month. We're going to be actually filtering more in to go back to the project on big families, but we got pulled into focusing on what was going on in Kansas in the last year acutely this month, because for the first time since Roe, 107 charges have been filed against Planned Parenthood. And it's significantly revealing that Planned Parenthood is falsifying documents, doing illegal abortions, around the country. Here in my own hometown, there's 2 lawsuits of unreported child rape going on across, and it's just horrifying things. These people are getting a third of their funding from our tax dollars.
Mm.
When you think about how difficult it is for families to make ends meet and try and have large families, and then they're siphoning money from our paychecks to go to Planned Parenthood to kill unborn children, and then lie about how old they are when they're killing them. And these girls in college, it is gut-wrenching that they are finding themselves in trouble, taking the morning after pill as if it's aspirin, going to Planned Parenthood in trouble without telling their parents. We have a national crisis on our hands, and if we don't stand up and question the activity inside every Planned Parenthood clinic in the country, which numbers over 850, we're going to get more and more of the same. And what's so sad, Joe, is, you know, people have not stopped to think about the value in siblings, and we're trying to raise awareness to that and move into a possible campaign, a media campaign down the road on that. Because if you think about it, if you don't have siblings, you don't have cousins. If you don't have cousins, you don't even have family reunions down the road.
Right.
And as a registered nurse, I have witnessed only children sitting at their parents' deathbed. They have no sibling support around them. They have no one to turn to. They're there alone. And I have been told on numerous occasions, and I feel like God's kind of tugging at me to continue to do something, but women who thought they were so, you know, so smart and so astute, and they weren't going to be bothered with kids when they were younger. One woman in particular, her story just pulled at my heartstrings, because she, just out of nowhere, when I was at a book sale with my husband down in South Carolina, just broke down sobbing to me. And she was in her, I would say, late 60s. And just when I told her I had 9 children and we were talking, she started sobbing and saying, oh, I'm so stupid. I took that stupid birth control pill, thought I was so smart when I was younger. Now my husband's dead. I have no children. And every day I rock on my porch and nobody comes to see me. And she was sobbing, sobbing as I was hugging her. And it hit me that day that if we do not turn around the lie that's been told in these public schools,
absolutely,
clinics going in, and we don't, if we don't turn this lie around, you know, the nursing homes of the future are just going to be as desolate and as agonizingly sad and regretful as men that lie in prison and can't undo their acts.
Right.
That have put them there, because you cannot ever go back and reclaim, you know, the conceptions that you prevented.
Right.
And it's so sad. And when you talk to these younger girls in college, and I've been blessed to be able to go and talk at some of these colleges, they think they're only supposed to have one or two and then get sterilized. They don't even understand church teaching on birth control and remaining open to life and permanent sterilization. They have already gone in the mentality that, oh my gosh, I can't afford more than two children. They don't understand, you know, you don't have to have everything, and that actually siblings get more from each other than you could ever give them materially.
Right.
In the whole world. And so I truly think that we need to get to a point where we can actually do an orchestrated campaign to go to and hit these college kids when they're watching these TV shows that most of parents like me would cringe at, where they, instead of seeing girls dance around and brag about what they're, which is what we see on these shows, you know, brag about their favorite birth control method, God help us, they should be seeing women that are attractive women that are happy in the beginning of that commercial that says, you know, I graduated with a degree in, you know, engineering or a doctor or nursing or whatever you're doing, and then it's just scale back and show their family and say, but my first career choice is my motherhood. Because I truly believe that girls want, in the deepness of their heart, one-on-one, they'll tell you, you know, I really do want to have a lot of kids, but I just am kind of afraid to say it because it's not the thing to say. We've got to make it socially acceptable again to say, I love kids, and I really do want to stay home with my kids. And, you know, what a buzz it started, you know, was it last year when the Ivy League women said by the time they're 30, they want to stay home with their kids. That is the natural inclination for mothers. You know, it's a cross for the women that have to go outside the home to work and to be away from their children. And, you know, it's a very sad state of affairs. And, you know, people say, well, it's too expensive. And that is the extra burden, I think, that the government adds on to trying to encourage folks to have more kids. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. It means it takes more sacrifice.
Right.
But, you know, you know, my kids, I have a little joke with them because, you know, they're always, oh, you know, kids will always complain about this or that. And I all say, oh, save it for therapy, guys. Your whole generation goes, you know. But in reality, I got to tell you what my theory is. I think so many of these high schoolers and kids are going to therapy because they don't have siblings to talk to.
Right.
And I think it's so sad for them. So I really believe it's time for us to raise awareness again about the value and the importance of siblings, because when we get older, and I can attest to this, and life gets stressful, and we're not always the nicest person to be around because life is stressful and we get grouchy. You know who's there for you and never leaves and goes away? Your siblings.
Right.
They're your best friends, and they will put up with you when no one else will, of course, besides yourself. But it's sad because those that don't have that, they're lost. And I've had a lot of conversations with people that have grown up without siblings, and it's sad. It's very sad. So,
you know, my wife and I used to give a talk at the Engaged Couple Seminar up in Laconia, New Hampshire for about 3 years. And every time we would get together with these young couples, I would always tell them, you know, men and women were created equal right from the very beginning, and the church has always taught that. But the big lie that's really been propagated through the centuries, the millennia really, is that women have to compete with men. And I think that's really come to a fruition, to a head here in our American culture, that we think that women have to compete. Women, I believe, think that they have to compete with men, and as a result, they've given up the glorious beauty that was given to them just by being women. And I think that's what you were kind of talking about when you see these, you know, 30-something, you know, very successful women, knowing in their heart of hearts that they would rather, you know, have children and rather, you know, and really pour out themselves to their families. And I think that that's really a big part of why our culture has continued to just inundate these women that they have to, oh, they can't have too many kids, and they have to go out and be successful, and they have to. I mean, it's never an issue of, are women smart enough, or are they skilled enough? Well, of course they are. I mean, and in many senses they're even that much more. But that's not what. You know, that's not the point of the whole matter, and I think when I said that, or when my wife and I would talk about these things, just the strange looks that we would get back. They've just never heard this message. They've never had anybody ever tell them that it's okay to be a mom. It's okay.
Well, and more important than that, it actually takes, I think, it takes more heroic patience and more intelligence to have the willingness to stay home and raise your children.
Oh yeah.
And you know, again, I'm not passing judgment on anybody that can't
right,
do that
course.
Because I, like I told you, God has so willed it that in order for us to have our Catholic shop, which really is there for so many people to come in and get Orthodox Catholic books and everything, you know, I do work 2 days a week for us to have our health insurance, and
right.
so. We're blessed that my husband can be with our children when I have to do that. But there are people that are forced and agonized. And I've talked to nurses at the hospital that say, I pray all the way to the hospital that my kids are safe while I'm gone. And that's really sad that economically some people are forced away from their children.
Oh, yeah.
But for those that are able to stay home, it's not easy. But,
no.
you know, it when you think about the fact that the feminist movement has actually propagated the lie on women that it is better to choose to send your children into a orchestrated daycare center
right.
where strange people who could care less really about your children that are there for a job to watch your children for an entire day, it boggles the mind. And I picked up a child for a friend at one of those daycare centers, and I'm not saying that there aren't some loving people there. I'm not saying that at all, Joe. But I was really depressed. When I left there, I said, you know, let her come to my house from now on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I went in, you know, there was just lines of kids, and it was like, everybody against the wall. Everybody get against the wall. Everybody get to your cubby. Don't touch each other. You know, I thought, oh my gosh, these poor little kids, they're like, they reminded me of little animals that they were all having them hold onto a rope as they were walking along.
Right.
And I thought, they all need their moms here to be hugging them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need these strange people telling them to go against the wall. And it made me really, really sad. And I think we're going to get some interesting feedback now that, you know, this generation has grown up from the daycare, you know, the daycare college kids, whether they turn around and want to put their kids back in daycare.
Right.
So it's just an interesting scenario of that you know, the me generation of I can have it all, I want to do it all. I really want to meet the woman that believes that's possible, because, you know, I got to tell you, I've tried to take on more of a load when we financially need it. It is not possible.
Right.
And we have two, I have a husband that can be there when I'm not. The kids suffer. And that's a politically incorrect thing to say, but the most important thing is the formation of the child.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, I'm very fair, I feel, when I talk to, you know, college kids, and I say, oh my gosh, you have 9 kids? And I always laugh because they'll go, you're so normal. And I think, oh, what does that mean? You know, but I think it's very fair. You have to say, it's not always easy.
Right.
I mean, there are many times that you just have to say, okay, Lord, help me through this day today. Help me. This is a moment I need help through. Many tireless nights when you have, you know, I have a special needs daughter that doesn't sleep well at all. It's not easy, but the rewards are so great. And, oh, my gosh, I just love having all my kids at home. And we're already looking forward to the holidays when all the big kids are coming home. The interaction and the reciprocity between the ages is so amazing. It's just, you can tell it's by God's design.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I put a lot of, speaking from personal point of view, I put a lot of onus on the men, on these husbands. I've seen it before where husbands aren't seeing eye to eye with the wives. The wives want to be home. They want to raise their children, and maybe the wives still have to work or whatever, but the husband's not fully committed to that program, and I think that's also what's got to change, and that's why I had that interview with Mark Houck from The Kingsman, to help encourage men to stand up and try to be the man that God created them to be, which often means to be the provider. Now, every family is uniquely different in their situation, so we can't speak, you know, in specific terms to everybody, but I feel like it's my job to find a way to create an opportunity for my wife to be home, to help to raise our children, and to we homeschool our kids, and to be the ones to form our children. That's what we want to do. We don't want to sit back and say, well, we let the world form our kids. We let the TV form our kids. We want to say that was our job, and so we had to make some sacrifices. We had to move. We had to cut back. And try to live on a single income, and oftentimes that's much more difficult than most people can bear. But we felt that was a very serious obligation that we had to go through. And you know, one of the other lies that I wanted to get to that I think is very important in what I see is happening in our society today is men have allowed, and Humanae Vitae prophesied this, in my opinion. You know, men have allowed women to sterilize themselves to the point where they basically become an organism like a man, not able to bear life. And that sterilization, this effect of birth control and this effect of abortion, has not served to raise the dignity of women, but quite the opposite, has disintegrated the dignity of women, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, that whole idea of not remaining open to God's call to allow him to procreate, I mean, nowhere did it say, and I'm surprised we don't hear this more often, you know, go forth and multiply and stop it too. You know,
right.
I don't hear hardly anybody say that, and I have many discussions. I work on a lot of these issues that we talk about with Women Influence the Nation with a lot of Catholics and non-Catholics alone, and it's just real interesting on the birth control issue. While it used to be looked at as a Catholic issue, I think that pendulum is swinging, and it's for the better, because people really don't realize that prior to 1930, all the churches
right.
opposed artificial birth control. And, you know, it really, if you appeal to the sense of remaining and leaving your life open to God's will, why you close that aspect off to it only really will get those that are truly open to God's grace thinking in the right direction. But, you know, there's so many stories of regret that people have mm-hmm. after they make that decision. You know, first of all, most unfortunately it's sad, but most couples aren't hearing that it's a mortal sin for sterilization. They don't hear that language. They don't hear that they aren't necessarily properly instructed even in their pre-Cana classes. So that's a sad thing. But, you know, as they move forward then, they're making decisions without a well-informed conscience on it.
Right.
If they move forward with the sterilization then and they find out later, they are just grief-stricken.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely grief-stricken. And I've had several stories, even one shared with me by an OB obstetric and gynecologist who said, two women, and this story is always so compelling, I'd like to tell it real quick. He has had two women, didn't know each other within his own practice, both having their second child, both insisting that he sterilize them. And he himself, since his story, has stopped all sterilizations and has had a reversion completely back to the Catholic faith. But he tried to talk him out of it. Both of them were in their late 20s. No, you're too young. Please don't do this. And they both insisted. And so upon the delivery of both of their children, he sterilized both of them at the delivery.
Mm.
And within the first 6 to 9 months, both of them lost that baby. One of them had an undetected heart defect, and the baby died in the first 6 months, and the other one was nursing the baby while she was during the night, and she fell asleep, and the baby fell out of bed and was hung between the bedside stand and the bed. And the doctor said it broke his heart. They were both back in there separately begging him to redo a reversal on that tubal ligation. And he said it was a defining moment for him, because he just said, I told you not to do it, and then it hit him. He did it. He had to make that ultimate decision to do that, and he now has an NFP-only practice. But I will tell you another thing that I've noticed as a nurse that is a continuing addition to the problem is that notice how many women nowadays are told by doctors you shouldn't have any more children. Mm-hmm. I hear that all the time from women. Well, my doctor says I can't handle any more, that my uterus just can't take it, that I can't have any more. And they're also, and this should, there should really be, I think, some type of ethical penalty for this. Doctors who offer women to have sterilization right after they have a baby, within minutes of delivering a baby, who can make a decision if they're not morally grounded at that moment? So that happens also, where a fast decision is made and then women regret that later.
Right.
And so those are two tragedies. And I believe OBGYNs, when they instruct women, oh, your body can't take it anymore. Mm. I mean, when you look back at many, many stories from our mothers and our grandmothers of how many times they were told, oh, you know, you shouldn't have any more children. I mean, they had 10, 15 kids at the time.
Right.
How is it that nowadays women who are nutritionally probably more healthy, more exercise, have probably the best health care probably in the last 100 years, are being told their bodies can't handle more than 1, 2, or 3 children at the most? I mean, it just seems like something doesn't all add up here.
Right. I mean, biblically speaking, we see story after story of women having multiple children, and there's never a case where a physician or a nursemaid ever said you have to stop having children, your uterus can't take it anymore. I mean, what did they do just 100 years ago when the average family size was probably at least 6, if not more? I mean,
well, I think it all, Joe, really points to what I think we all know is a spiritual crisis within the family. Because if you rely on yourself to solve all your own problems, then you, of course, you're going to be afraid to have a large family. You're going to be afraid if your bills are going to get paid. You're going to be, but you have to constantly look in your faith, rely on the grace of the sacraments, and trust that God is going to provide. My mom used to always say, if you work with God, he works with you. And it sounds like a trite saying, but I remember her saying that so much when we were growing up. And I have to share a cute little story from our little kids. You know, when we say our night prayers, our big patron, of course, St. Joseph, with our Catholic shop. And my husband, at the end of our night prayers, would always say, St. Joseph, the provider, pray for us. And our little kids, for a long time, thought we were saying, St. Joseph, the provider, pay us. So they were saying, St. Joseph, the provider, pay us. When we figured that out, we really laughed hard at that. And we said, well, I guess we can say pay us.
Right, yeah, I'll take that too.
So if we did not have our faith that, you know, we were trying to live out our faith, remain open to God's grace, and, you know, how can... I never could relate to the mentality of anybody that is like, nope, that's enough of me. No more little ones that are coming from my offspring, you know?
Right.
I mean, if you can't remain open to the life that God gives you, another soul being entrusted to you to do good things for God and the world, you know, that's a lack of faith. And I think we just have to really try to recatechize people and reinstill in them a trust in God and a love for children, because the general response, when I used to have to ask people, is there a chance you're pregnant? You cannot believe. Oh my gosh, no. Although they were a little more profane with that. I'll shoot my husband. I'll shoot you. I'll kill myself. I better not be. I mean, you cannot believe the negative responses when it came to the simple question, is there a chance you could be pregnant? I think that there's just an overall negative feeling on society about having children. And yet, when you go somewhere with a lot of children that are well-behaved, they are the center of attention.
Right.
Right. And so I think that people miss having that, but at the same time, the whole thing of you can have it all and the feed into a woman should have the perfect body and the perfect life and all that that we've heard from the feminists has led to a lot of women in their 40s and 50s feeling pretty lonely now without children.
Right. And, you know, and again, biblically speaking, the, every single instance of children in the Bible are a blessing. You know, they're always just a blessing. And I think that's what we're missing. You know, we've basically murdered an entire generation, if not more, of our American citizens in abortion and contraception. And that's just that's a whole bunch of blessings that we will never get to encounter except when we go and face our judgment. And speaking personally, having lived a pretty rough life for many years, I'm not looking forward to that. I mean, there's going to be a lot of regret, I think. And saying the words that you basically witnessed to, you know, the women saying these things about not wanting to be pregnant, well, that's going to come back and haunt us. And I think that as Catholic Christians, we need to be praying for these people. Because we all have a big price to pay, I think, and some of us are aware it's coming and some of us don't have an idea that it's coming, so we really do need to pray about that. But we only have a couple of minutes left, Jen, so why don't you talk to us about what Wynn is going to be up to, how we can plug in, where can we get some information, give us all of that.
Okay, you can go to our website, which is womeninfluencingthenation.com. As I told you, we are following the battle in Kansas because it is so cutting edge in the pro-life movement right now. It is the first offensive that is being taken to expose the lies inside of Planned Parenthood. We do have an email list that you can join to get current updates that's happening there. Former Attorney General Phil Klein of Kansas, who is now District Attorney, he is one unbelievably courageous man. I've had the blessing of getting to know and work with him to learn just exactly what the abortion industry is about. We've been watching what he's been doing and trying to follow that, seeing that these illegal late-term abortions that are going on inside Kansas are happening on 90% of women from outside of Kansas. That makes it a national crisis. And so that is why we are watching right now so closely, because what happens in Kansas, I believe, is going to spread across to all the Planned Parenthoods across the country. This is probably one of the most significant opportunities from now, since the passage of Roe versus Wade, that we have to make some significant progress in trying to push back the lies of Planned Parenthood and filter people towards the pregnancy centers that can help them and truly take care of them versus those that come away from Planned Parenthood, live regretful lives, end up in the Silent No More camp who do help them and realize that they have killed their own child.
Wow. Well, how do we get in touch with you? How can we help?
They can go to my website, womeninfluencingthenation.com. There is a place that you can contact me, email me through that. I think we have a phone number on there. And we'd love to have anybody join on in their state that would be interested in being a local contact there. And it doesn't take a lot of time. Usually we just send out emails, and if we have an action item in your area, sometimes if we have a gathering, like for instance, we did have a gathering in Kansas, local folks there within a driving radius came and met us there. Sometimes we have letters to the editor we want to send out. We have one of the things we did in Kansas, which was a tremendous success, is we emailed all of the legislature and the attorney general to get them to move on hearings and on trying to prosecute the late-term abortionist George Tiller, and they were inundated with thousands and thousands of letters and phone calls because of the action that we took through Women Influence in the Nation. And I so loved that, because it just goes to show you that even though we're home taking care of our families, we can still be very, very effective in getting across what we are trying to do, which is defend the truth for and reclaim respect for women and young girls and the unborn in this country again.
Praise God. Well, Jen, thank you very much for taking your time and talking with me about this. My audience will, I think, be well blessed by having listened to your message and hopefully plugging into what you're doing. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Joe.
All right, Jen, you have a great night.
Thank you.
God bless. Well, that's going to do it for podcast number 23 with Jen Giroux. I hope you enjoyed that interview, and I would really love to hear from you. So please send me your feedback. Go to the blog, www.catholichack.com. Send me an email. Catch me on Facebook. Catch me on Twitter. There are many ways you can call the voicemail feedback line at 206-888-1732. Call me, leave me the voicemail feedback, and I will play that on the next podcast. So, thank you guys very much for your support. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please leave me a review on iTunes and buy a Catholic Hack t-shirt. God bless. The Catholic Hack, the best in parking lot podcasting.